Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dark Natter, the podcast where we slice, dice, and dissect your favourite works of dark fiction. I am, as always, John Richter, and I am joined today, honoured to be joined today, by a special guest, which is Angelina Allsop.
Yay! Hi!
Hello, hello. Joining us from across the Atlantic. As always, I'm in my flat in London. Where are you?
I'm a nomad. So we travel around a lot. Right now we're traveling around in Arizona and very soon, all over the world. So that's very exciting. So right now we're in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Oh, fantastic.
Beautiful house sit. Yeah. We do something really interesting. We house sit. So we kind of bounce around and babysit people's houses and animals and
I mean, we'll get onto your writing very soon. But of course, that even that in itself sounds like an inspiration for the plot of several books. Actually,
yeah. Yes.
I guess you have to steer clear of any creepy old hotels. That's the only thing.
I haven't run into too many ghosts yet, and really, it's just actually been really good for the inspiring for writing.
And I suppose the ghost thing, you know, this is a dark fiction podcast, of course, but that's kind of sad if you haven't bumped into any ghosts. So fingers crossed you get more. I've touched there on you being a writer, of course, which was a bit of a spoiler. And I should shut up now and let you introduce yourself and your work.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I write middle grade young adult fiction. My first book is called Peter Green and the Unliving Academies. It's the first book of the Unliving Chronicles. And it's about a kid who dies and his adventure starts. So it's really fun. It takes place in such an awesome, awesome location, afterlife. I didn't realize how much fun it would be to create a world. I mean, I guess I always knew it would be because, I don't know, inherently. But it was really fun, like, to be able to create, like, the mood and the atmosphere and the characters and everything is just really awesome. So,
the thing, isn't there about, and I know everyone's experience of the kind of writing process is different, but it's when you go, oh, this is a good idea. Wouldn't it be great if this happened? Yes. And then you kind of realize, oh, yeah, and it's my book. So it can happen. I can put it in and no one can stop me. Yes.
I love that. It's so fun. Yeah. And this is the first of a series. So there's going to be several books behind it. I'm hoping to publish again book two early next year. But yeah, I can do that and just like write notes. I'm like, God, this would be so great in a future book. Let's put it in the next one.
There is a thing. I think I had this conversation with someone once about this idea of like holding back some of your ideas for future stuff. And I don't know, I've got kind of mixed opinions on that. So it's like, well, if you've got something great, why wouldn't you just put it all in? But then maybe that you do get to like your book is full and there's no more space for any more ideas. And if you try and shoot too many in, it can end up a bit disappointing, maybe.
Well, yeah. And then you get into kind of writing craft. I mean, it depends on what it is, right? That cool thing. I agree with you. You put everything in that needs to be in the book, but there's like ebbs and flows. If you just jam pack it like with all these amazing fight scenes, it's like fight scene, fight scene, fight scene. Then I don't know, you can exhaust the reader and probably not the writer because we love that, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like you kind of have to have it.
And there's a pacing thing as well there, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mention this probably too often on this show, but it's just something that I sort of encounter a lot, not just in books, but in films and other kind of media. So in dark fiction, obviously it doesn't necessarily have to be kind of horror, but you'll get this sort of, yes, there'll need to be a payoff. So if it was a horror work, you need to have the kind of, you know, the big scary reveal of the ghost or perhaps the gory comeuppance for the main character or the villain or, there's got to be some kind
monster.
Of
monster. You have to see the monster. Yeah.
What you don't want to do is see the monster in chapter 2 and 3 and 4 and again. And then by the end of it, you're just like, oh, this monster's kind of lost all of it. You've got to be quite sparing and get the pacing right and kind of build up to it. Slowly.
Yeah. So I read The Art of Horror, I can't remember where this came from. I follow some people on YouTube and it might have been on on YouTube. There's a guy called the Closer Look. The Closer Look on YouTube. I told you about him.
Yes, you did. This was a link you've sent to me before. Yeah.
He's really good. So he talks about how to like scare the audience. And I want to say this is from one of his audience, like one of those, but it's almost scarier to kind of set a scene of what could be and then have like a little taste of it. So like, for example, I think I read this from a book, this specific scene. So it's like you go into, this is post-apocalyptic, and then you go into this basement and there's people chained up, and through some like context clues, you see that they're going to be food. And then you hear a creak upstairs. That creak is scarier than seeing like a monster.
Perfectly put. It's been set up. You know, there's something that eats people, and then you hear a noise that suggests it's about to appear. I wonder what it's going to be. That's loads better than you're ever going to be able to deliver. Even the best writer in the world, whoever that is, that's obviously a subject for debate, would struggle to pay off that moment of tension with the reveal is always going to be a disappointment, maybe. Yeah. But that's what we're battling with, I suppose. The problem is we're not allowed to just end our books at that point.
I know. Well, I mean, you'll piss off your readers. You can.
Yeah, you're right. You could. You just get loads of 2-star reviews. Oh, it was really good up till it just ended in the middle of a page.
Piss people off. Yeah, people are not the biggest fans of cliffhangers, you know, unless you're going to do a series. Like, you can kind of get away with like a small cliffhanger in a series, I think.
Yeah,
you have to do some sort of payoff, but
it's like TV shows. You know, the shows that just run on and on and on forever, because partly there's that slightly American thing of having seasons. So it's not like, oh, the plan was to have a show that would run for one series or two or three. It's like, oh, this show is popular, therefore let's just milk it forever. And it's just cliffhanger. And once you get to about series 8, you're like, this is just going to go on forever. And there's no big ending here. That's the sense of people's... shows like Lost got a lot of that criticism, or The X-Files, maybe.
Yeah. So that's more in the... It moves into the soap opera genre in my head. It's correct. Never going to end, versus this is a story and it's taking 3-4 seasons to tell it, you know? Right.
Which are two completely different things. And, you know, some people like soap operas and I suppose they've got a place, but yeah, I'm certainly not I don't recall any storylines of Coronation Street being my favourite pieces of dark fiction. Although I suppose maybe that could be one for another show. Well, we're on to, of course, we've launched into there a bit of a discussion about some of the principles of good sort of dark fiction writing. But before we go any further, a quick reminder for everyone of what we're here for. We are, of course, here to decide whether a particular piece of dark fiction that our guest has brought along is worthy of a place in our ever-expanding sinister hall of fame that we call the Hall of Pain. And you have to say it in that voice, so that, you know, you have to put a creepy voice on.
Naturally.
Yeah, you know how these things work. And we've got some of the back catalogue of the Hall, who currently resides in the Hall of Pain. We've got, it's a bit of a mishmash of, so like Michael Myers is in there from the Halloween movies. Obviously Jason, he got in recently because it was Friday the 13th. Stephen King is there from the kind of literary world. Of course. Got a couple of video game franchises in the Silent Hill made it in there.
That's a good one.
The Last of Us. I think we've even got the Disneyland Haunted Mansion ride. That's it.
I love it.
We had someone on who pitched that one, which was really good.
That's a great one.
We had an album, you know, the musical version of War of the Worlds. So I feel like we've covered quite a wide array of genres or media.
I love that. Yeah. I didn't listen to that one. And I love listening to sound. I listen to soundtracks when I write. So I need to like add that one.
Oh, it's good. It's good. It's a bit kind of dated in a way. It's a little bit sort of cheesy 80s sounding, but in a good way, if that makes sense.
I like 80s cheesy. So it's all right.
we're getting into sort of revealing how old we are, which I'll definitely keep mine under. So, Angelina, what piece or perhaps broader category of dark fiction are you bringing for discussion today?
Well, I mean, I was thinking about my genre. So, actually, my genre is dark fiction for children. So I wanted to talk about my favorite ones as like my favorite dark children's fiction.
Brilliant. Love it. So, it's definitely not something we've covered. So this is great. And of course, it's a bit of a immediate nostalgia memory lane trigger.
I know. Yeah. When I first fell in love with that. Yeah. So
Tell us your journey with sort of, you know, how when your first memories might be a good place to start.
Okay, so I kind of, I didn't even think of doing music, but I wanted to kind of grab from like a few different types, like avenues of genre or of fiction. So one of my favorite cartoons as a kid was called All Real Monsters. Did you have that?
So the answer is yes. So in, I think there's a bit of a weird one way thing across the Atlantic with TV. So I know you over in the States will get some of our telly, but not much. Whereas we just get everything or loads of it. So when I was, so I was born in 1983. I'm 37 years old at the time of recording. It's quite depressing. Never mind. But in the early 90s, when we first got like cable TV, I would have been, I don't know, like 8 or 9 or whatever. Plus I had younger siblings. So they were obviously watching kids' telly as well. So we used to get Nickelodeon as a channel in the UK. So that was just wall-to-wall sort of American, you know, Doug, Rugrats, Ren Stimpy was on there. That was blooming dark.
Which one?
You remember Ren and Stimpy?
Oh, yeah, Ren and Stimpy. I thought you said Rent. I was like, no.
I mean,
Ren and Stimpy.
As far as I know, they probably, one of the subjects of their regular arguments was that, you know, Ren had to go and work at a job and Stimpy didn't do anything and Ren had to pay all the rent. So maybe that was relevant. I'm sure that fueled a couple of their fights, but that was a dark show. So we definitely used to get Real Monsters was on that sort of loop of kind of Nickelodeon TV when I was a kid.
Oh, so great. I loved it. I loved everything about it.
Was it Ickis, Crumb and Oblina? If I remembered that right, there was the one where he had his eyeballs in his hands.
Eyeballs in the hands. And then there was like a sort of purple one. I can't even remember. It was so long ago.
And it had, this is a real random bit of trivia that you've just reminded me of. There was a scream sound effect in the opening, in the music for Real Monsters. And that is like a stock sound effect. And so it crops up in loads of TV shows and films all the time. And every time I hear it, I go, oh, that's the scream from Real Monsters.
Oh, I have to look that up. I didn't know that they used it in another Seth.
It's not the Wilhelm scream, you know, the really famous
one.
It's not that one. It's like a different one, but you will hear it. If you look up the Real Monsters music and listen to that scream, then you'll start spotting it in other films.
Music. I'm writing this down because I want to look
That's good. I'm glad. Random useless trivia. But yeah, Real Monsters was good. And that was, I guess that's part of what makes dark fiction for kids is, it's kind of obvious, I suppose, but it's got elements of horror and scary things, but there's a cutoff, isn't there? There's, you know, the monsters are monsters, but they're not too scary.
Yeah. It's like, it's interesting, new, it's a different world. It's like permission to be a freak. And it provides kind of like a safe way to press some of the norms. Like think about Adam's Family. How they were just unapologetically them, right?
Yeah, they were cool, weren't they? They were just like, yeah, this is us. Take it or leave it.
Yeah. And I think that's so important for like kids, because I think every child, especially going through like hormones, you know, the changes that time, you feel like a freak. You feel like no one else understands you. You feel like you're by yourself and everything's embarrassing to talk about. So like, if you see someone who kind of celebrates that, like in All Real Monsters, he was so stinky. And like, remember that? Yeah, he was like, there was a stinky
That was
monster.
Like his power, wasn't it?
It just feels good to be able to relate to someone, even if it doesn't like, I mean, girls having their like This is so weird that we're talking about this, but girls having their periods, like,
yeah,
imagine,
I can only imagine how stressful and traumatizing that must be. And of course, girls will have, you know, you get some parents who'll sit you down and have a really awkward chat about things, and that's probably get embarrassing as well, but at least you know. Of course, some parents don't do that because it's too embarrassing, so they just don't do it. So you're growing up, and then suddenly you've got these things happening, and you, what the hell is this? No one told me about this.
Yeah, just the emotions. Oh my God, the emotions. It's like just bawling for no reason.
Sounds like me now, to be honest. I think I've worked in the wrong order. But never
mind. That's funny.
The Real Monsters, that's a great place to start. Can you fondly remember any other bits of sort of maybe whether it was kids TV or sort of very very early Angelina viewing that maybe stuck in your mind?
So that's the earliest ones that I can remember. I tend to like draw more, like I really liked that genre a lot. So the earlier ones, that's kind of on my earlier scale that I can remember, but Roald Dahl was around that time. Yeah. And The Witches was like such an important book for me. I loved it so much. Did you read that one? So The Witches?
I actually, to my shame, have not read that book. The one I remember from Roald Dahl, and it's probably like a different one for every different person, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you ever read The Twits, do you remember The Twits?
No, I remember it, and I know that he wrote it. I didn't read that one.
The most memorable bit from that, just very quickly, is it's basically a horrible old couple who are both horrible, and they're trying to like out-horrible each other. She's got a glass eye, and she's always playing pranks on him by leaving it in his cup of tea and stuff. And he's even more horrible. And he convinces her she's shrinking by gluing a tiny bit of extra wood to the bottom of her walking stick every day. And as her walking stick's getting bigger, she becomes convinced she's shrinking. He's like, yeah, you're shrinking. You're going to disappear. You've got a disease. And then there's just one other figure. He has a massive beard. And there's a bit about the reason he doesn't shave his beard is because all his food and cornflakes and sardines get stuck in it. And then if he's ever hungry, he can just, you know, there's like a snack. That's kind of ruined beards, but I'll never get mine longer than this for that reason.
That's hilarious. It scarred you that early.
Yeah. So every time you see a guy with a beard, even Santa, you know, you're slightly suspicious. Is there any sort of day old breakfast remnants in there, Santa? Don't come too close.
That's hilarious.
Well, what about what was special for you about that book?
So it was scary for me, but it was the first like scary, maybe that was around the same time as Aura Monsters, because I was young when I read that. It was scary, but I was brave enough to read it, and the kid's bravery in it, like there's a kid in there, that inspired me to be brave. Like it made me feel like, yeah. And the drawing, like the art in there is so awesome. Like Roald Dahl's art is really cool. I think he uses the same artist for all of his books.
Quentin Blake. So Quentin Blake, yeah, for all the drawings. And then this is a slightly controversial statement, but I will say it. There's a sort of celebrity in the UK called David Walliams, who's he's sort of one of these, like he's famous. He's just on the telly. He's famous for kind of, you know, he used to be a comedian. He's been like a kind of presenter on a couple of these like celebrity kind of shows. And he started writing kids' books, and he's using Quentin Blake to do the pictures. And I'm a little bit down on it because I'm like, Quentin Blake's supposed to be for Roald Dahl, you know, but I guess he still has to earn a living somehow. So maybe I'm talking rubbish, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But it's almost like I wonder if the books are good, I can forgive it.
Yeah, and to be fair, and I've never read one, so I should reserve judgment on that, actually.
Maybe. Yeah. Because then it's almost like a cheap, like.
It's whether it's an homage. Is it a loving homage, or is it a slightly cheap sort of, is he trying to say, I'm the new Roald Dahl? And I'm a bit, no, you're not. But then I've read his books, so yeah.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I wonder how if his fiction is good, then it's almost like you've earned the right to use
pass the torch. Kind of
in my head, that doesn't matter. My opinion, that doesn't matter. But it's like, and then you can. I don't know. I feel like that. Like I just got my book cover redone, and it's almost like it inspires me to write at a new level because she did such a good job with the cover. It's like I need to write better for this cover.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's funny little. It's like you know, if you come up, you've got like a placeholder title, and you know it's not a very good title, and you just, I'm not happy with the title, and then one day you're like, yes, you figured out what the title is. That you then go and write about 5,000 words that same day because you're really inspired by this title you've come up with.
Yes, yeah. And there was an author that also said, like, you can write a whole book from a sentence. If you get a really good first sentence, it can like almost write the rest of the book for you. Brilliant. And that's what happened
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's what happened with mine.
Oh, I was going to say it. So is that what your book, your experience of writing was like that? It was just, you just got going, you were into it, and it just kind of flowed and
felt And I changed the first sentence because like it was recommended by the publisher, and I think I'm going to change it back because I liked the original one so bad or so well. But the first sentence was, Pete woke up only knowing three things, his name, his age, and the fact that he was dead. And I changed it a little, but I love that. It wrote the whole book.
I think I remember because I have got that book and I've read it on my Kindle. And I remember that bit now that you've just jogged my memory. And yeah, that opening bit is a great, well, it's just a great setup, isn't it? It's like a, you know, because that's a difficult subject to deal with, isn't it? Is the death of a child in effect, but equally, I think to your point about why is dark fiction good for kids, it's because these things are real, right? Like people do die. Yeah. You can't, if you bring a kid up and pretend there's no such thing as death, I think that's maybe not when they're 3 or 4 years old, but there comes a point where they do need to understand these things. So to introduce the concepts in a kind of almost like a lighthearted way, to me seems like the right way to go about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's empowering too. I mean, do you remember that time where the parents wouldn't tell you stuff? Like they were keeping secrets from you because you were a kid. And I'm not arguing that that's not right. But remember how pissed off, I mean, did you feel that way? How pissed off you were that they were not telling you stuff?
I remember. So I went to I don't want to offend any sort of religious listeners, but I'm an atheist, but I went to like a Christian primary school, and not because my parents are big Christians. It's just because it was like the local school. So they just, we're C of E, you know, just lied on the form. So I went to the school and it was all full blown, like hymns, you know, prayers every day. It was a quite religious school, I guess. And because you're a kid, you just assume that what you've been told, like, that's it. That's what everyone believes because it's the facts. And then one day, I think I was about, I don't know, 7 or 8 or something. And I sort of stumbled upon the concept of atheism, or this idea that, not everyone believes in God. A lot of people think that that's not real and they don't pray. And it sort of blew my mind. What do you mean? It might not be real. I just, all this, Mrs. Byron, she told me that X, Y, and Z happened. And then I sort of mulled it over for a bit. Decided I was an atheist, started telling all my classmates when I was about 8. So in assembly, when everyone's praying, I would just sit there like, nope, not for me, this. Which was, but ridiculously, I still carried on believing in Father Christmas until I was about 10.
Oh, that's the best.
I stopped believing in God 2 years before I stopped believing in Santa. The day I found out that Santa wasn't real, they had to tell me, because I think, I don't know, I probably would have still believed in him now. And they were like, Dave, you're 10 years old, you do know there's no Santa. I was furious. I went out of a tantrum, stormed off. I'm going to run away. You lied to me.
Oh, that's awesome. That's the best, actually.
But so there you go. Proves your point. You were correct.
I feel like I didn't have my own opinions until I was much older. Like, I just assumed the opinions of my parents. I was kind of a boring kid, but whatever. Anyway.
Well, I'm sure that was not.
So it's very impressive to me that you became an atheist at that young of age. That's very amazing.
And of course, what I don't remember is, like, is that, did my dad sort of prod me a bit in that direction? Like, was he obviously telling me, you know, all this stuff you're hearing at school, kid, it's not real. You know, maybe that was a bit of his influence. I'm not sure, but But yeah, so so that's it. As a kid, your views and your opinions and your ideas of what the world is, they're shaped by only a small number of things, like what your parents tell you, what your teachers tell you, and what you read in books or see on the TV, you know.
But for me, like, so a little bit different, like, or not different, in addition to, I have vivid memories of, like, I knew something bad was happening. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal. It was just family drama, right? I knew some family drama was happening, but my parents weren't telling me about it. And I was annoyed about that. I'm like, I'm old enough to where I can understand this, and you're treating me like a small child. And these books and TV shows don't treat children like children. They treat him like the adult, the hero of the story. And so, like that's what I like so much about it, were these young kids doing really amazing things because of whatever the circumstance put them in there. Or, like, I mean, there's a whole, like, Goosebumps series where it's like the, you know, 12 to 15 year old is the hero of the story, and they have to save the parents, or they have to stop the monster. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, super empowering in a way that, like, I believed it, you know, like, not in the sense that I believed, like, monsters existed, but it was just like,
it made you think you could achieve and accomplish things even at that age. Instead of, I'll have to wait till I'm an adult before I can accomplish anything. So, empower. Maybe that's the appeal, or that's a big part of the appeal to young readers or to young people. The Goosebumps books, it's interesting. So, again, showing that I'm sadly much older than you. So they didn't exist when I was a kid. But what did exist when I was at, like, primary school and early high school, so I don't know, about like 10 through to 13, there was a series of books called Point Horror. And Point Horror was like, they did some other ones. They had, like, Point Crime and Point Romance, but I think Point Horror was the start. And it was just loads of different writers writing horror novels, short horror novels, for almost like for teenagers. So not so much young children. This was more pitched at, like, 13 and 14-year-olds. So it was all, like, I don't know, the high school prom, and then somebody got jilted, so they stabbed some, that kind of stuff. I can't remember any of the specifics.
Oh, yeah.
R.L. Stein was often in the Point Horror kind of canon. So I remember R.L. Stein being one of the Point Horror writers, like one of the better ones, one of the favorite ones. And then R.L. Stein did the Goosebumps series almost off the back of that, by which point I was too old really to go, because I would have been too old to go. It would have almost been like dropping down a level of. Because I had younger siblings, my brother, he had a full bookshelf of dozens of Goosebumps books. So they were a big, so I remember them distinctly, and all the really wacky kind of colorful covers.
Yeah, so I'm the same age as you. I think I'm like 3 years difference, but it's the same. Like, when the Goosebumps came out, I was a little too old for them. And then same, I'm the oldest of six kids, so there were Goosebumps all over our house. And it was the same. I just was fascinated by it and, like, envious of it. I mean, I had Babysitter's Club, and that was pretty cool, and I liked that a lot. That's definitely not dark fiction, but I kind of wish that I had, like, a dark fiction, because I really like the genre. But they did do Fear Street. Did you ever read any of it?
I don't know that one. That's a new one on me.
Oh, that's a good one. So that was, like, the Point Horror of Goosebumps. It was written by R.L. Stein, and it was for the teenagers, and they were really good.
Fantastic. Really good. And obviously really talented. And I, to my shame, I don't know anything about R.L. Stein. I don't even know if R.L. Stein is male, female. I know nothing about that person, but they've been famous for decades of my life, if you see what I mean.
You know what? I was just thinking about that, about Abrams. I don't know what J.J. Abrams looks like.
Yep. No idea. Weird, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's cool, though. Like, it's like you can be as an author, you can be a huge celebrity making millions of dollars. I'm pretty sure Awesome makes millions of dollars. And no one knows. You can just walk into a restaurant and order food, and no one will know.
It's like you've got all the benefits of celebrity, but without the horrible bits where you get, you know, accosted.
No privacy. And then the really diehard fans will ask you for an autograph, maybe.
And I guess in some ways, maybe that's kind of nice to get recognized when it's rare. But if it's happening all the time, yes.
I can only imagine. And I think most authors would prefer it that way. I think most authors are a bit introverted.
Yeah. My
more.
Missus was on the TV in like a soap. And she just used to get pestered to death all the time. Like you couldn't really.
Who is this?
So my old, my previous girlfriend, basically. For a number of years, she used to be on the telly. And she just used to get people would quite rude sometimes. People would just come up and just, you know, sort of barge into your conversation. Oh, can I have your autograph? Or, oh, you're such a body. And can I take a photo? And, you know, they're only fans of the show she was in. So, you know, she's obviously it's part of a living she was making at the time. But yeah, it wasn't particularly pleasant, or at least my perception of it was I don't think, and particularly as you say, you know, she was an actress. Most writers were all complete introverts who were like, oh my God, yeah, a real person.
Let me just go into my cave. Thank you. Yeah. I was wondering about that. Like J.K. Rowling, Joanne Rowling. I wonder if she can go anywhere now, you know, without
there are a few really recognizable, you know, like George R.R. Martin. He's really recognizable.
Yeah.
Pulls his beard off or whatever.
Stephen King. He has a very distinctive look, I think, but I don't know. He might, like, if I was just in a crowd of old white men, I don't know if I would necessarily look at him. Like on his cover, I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen him on his cover before. If I'm thinking of him, I can picture what he looks like, but in real life, I don't know.
Some people might get away with it. They might sort of
think
past before you can hang on a minute.
Yeah. Like, wait a second.
Maybe some people you wouldn't approach either. You know, like Stephen King seems like a really nice guy. So I think you probably would feel okay to say hello to him, but maybe some others would be a bit scary, a bit intimidating. I don't know.
Yeah.
That'll be us one day, Angelina. When we're really famous millionaire writers, we'll be the scary, intimidating. We'll be like, no autographs for you.
Go, commoners. For sure not, but it's fun to think about.
Yeah, exactly. We can imagine these things. So what about any other sort of children's or young adult dark fiction that springs to mind?
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about this one. What do you think about Matilda? Did you read that one or watch the movie? Both.
Yeah, read it and watched the film at some point as well.
Yeah, I don't know if that one counts as dark fiction. It has like a few dark elements of it, but it's more like, at what point do you... So this is a fun topic, like the topic of dark fiction, You know, it's like the antagonist is super scary, especially for kids, right? Mm-hmm. And she has this dark, scary house that you have to like go through to get, you know, the thing or whatever. And I can't remember, what was she in there for? Where was she trying to take?
Can't remember. I apologize. It was ages ago when I read that.
Yeah, something for Miss Honey. So Miss Trumbull was the scary one.
Yeah, Miss Trunchbull or whatever she was.
Trunchbull, yeah. Trunchbull. Oh, and then the Chokey.
Yeah.
The Chokey. Okay, I think that counts as dark fiction.
I suppose it's, it's an interesting label, isn't it? So obviously we badge this show as a dark fiction show, not a horror show. And I think, I think, and obviously horror is the darkest of dark fiction. So it's in, definitely is in. But I just feel like, so take Lord of the Rings, for example. Lord of the Rings is not horror, definitely not. But it does have scary, almost horror-like elements.
It's dark.
It's got, you know, Shelob, the terrifying giant spider. The orcs in general are quite
scary. The orcs are terrifying. The sounds of them. Ugh.
You know what I mean? There's Saruman, the fact that he betrays his own people and turns on Gandalf. That's scary. So it's a book you can read. And I read that when I was about 11 or 12 when I read Lord of the Rings. Thought it was amazing. Or you can watch the films. And it's definitely got peril and kind of fear. Even Gollum is quite scary at first when he's kind of stalking them until, you know, he becomes a bit of a, almost like a pathetic, sympathetic character to an extent. Poor old Gollum. Bless
him. Poor Gollum.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to win it.
Happy end for him, though. arguable.
That's true.
His face was really happy. He was dying.
Yeah, he sort of got what he wanted, you know, in his last final There's a whole separate thing there about characters who are not the main villain, but they are a villain and they're integral to the finale. There's a few examples of that. I was talking about this the other day to my brother for some reason. I was like, Gollum's the best one. And he was like, well, what about Trash Can Man in The Stand? And it was like, that's a good one as well.
I didn't read The Stand. Yeah, I need to read that one. I'm ashamed to say that.
Oh, don't be silly. No, it's a whopper as well. It's one of those you'll have to set aside and it gets hard.
I need Dune is on my list and The Stand is on my list. Especially because the Dune is being made into a show looks really good.
But sorry, we're jumping around a little bit. I feel a bit sorry for the whole Dune movie because of course there's the old David Lynch movie that was generally kind of panned. I actually think that's all right.
I liked it.
The new one looked like this big blockbuster epic. But of course, it's coming out in COVID. It's not even going to be in cinemas. I think it's just coming on the TV. Like that's a shame, isn't it? But, Dune is definitely worth watching. I read the first one, and it is a great book. You can see why it's regarded as a classic kind of thing.
Yeah. So is that one a series or it's just one giant book?
I only read the first book, and I think it's a trilogy. And mm-hmm. I think the original author wrote all three of the trilogy, and then there's subsequent follow-ups that I think his son wrote. And then, depending on who you ask, some people will say, don't bother with those. You know, the original trilogy is the main thing.
They're like, it's kind of like in the world, but a different storyline or something that has like Easter eggs from Dune. Oh, okay.
And even Dune is yet another example of it's not horror, certainly not horror, but it is dark fiction. And maybe there's I think there are lots of people like me and like yourself who like that dark stuff, and that's what you would write about. There'll be those elements in it, which isn't the same as saying, "Oh, I love horror films," and all I watch is slasher movies, and which I do. But that's kind of separate. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, that's all. Yeah. So that's on my list. I need to. Dune and we got sidetracked. I'm sorry. But yes, I have like a list. I could talk about this like forever, but there's a couple like classics that I did want to bring up.
Please do.
The Chronicles of Narnia.
Brilliant. We had that in the we had like a school library at that same primary school I was talking about, and I remember that was one that I, borrowed and read at the time.
There's one other one that I can't, like, now I'm spacing the name, so give me a second. It's like where they A Wrinkle in Time. Did you ever read that one?
No, that's a new one. I don't think I know that one.
Good. It's not new. It was when we were in, or I read it, and it was like a Nobel Prize winner or Newbery. It had one of those like prizes, the Newbery or something like that. So we had to read like one of those types of books in elementary school. And I read that one, I think, in fifth or sixth grade. So it had already won that award. So
And it's always a bonus, isn't it? When you're forced to read something at school and it turns out to be great, you're like,
really good. I think that was one that we read as like a class or whatever. I don't know, but I just devoured it. I think I took it and read the whole book myself instead of waiting.
Brilliant.
That one was really good. It's like alien. It's like closer to like aliens than monsters. Okay. And it talks about like just like time warps and like different worlds, and like it's a kid too that goes and does all this stuff.
The big sort of looming shadow over this conversation is of course the H word of Harry Potter, and I think maybe that so a common theme across a lot of these books we've talked about is this idea of a normal kid that could be you, reader, could be just a standard kid like you with kid problems and kid anxieties. But they go off and they have this amazing adventure and they're really brave. So that it's almost like a trope of the genre, isn't it? That in kids fiction, not even exclusively dark fiction, just kids fiction in general, it's often about a normal kid who is then put into an abnormal fantastical situation. And that's kind of the fantasy and the escapism, maybe.
Yeah. See, I like that. I mean, okay. So it's not, I've seen ones where like the person was kind of extraordinary from the beginning. So you can argue that in the Hunger Games, the reason that Katniss was so amazing, she just was amazing at the very beginning. And then she was pushed into extraordinary.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. This was sort of unearthed, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. But Harry Potter was just a normal kid pushed into like extraordinary things. And I think that's why Harry Potter was more world loved. Like, you know, like people are obsessed about it. It was like, it was really, they could picture themselves in Harry Potter, in Harry's shoes.
Yeah, see, maybe to contrast those two, the Hunger Games was very successful, and it was, you know, a good set of movies made out of it and so on. But the central character was a person living in a fantasy world, not an earthling, if you see what I mean. Or maybe a dystopian alternate timeline, if you see what I mean. Whereas Harry Potter was like real world, present day, young lad, admittedly in some quite crap circumstances, having to live under the stairs or whatever it was in his cupboard. But so there's, to me, that's maybe that just tips it over into being a bit more it's about being relatable, I think. That doesn't mean you necessarily want to pander to the biggest audience in your writing. So you don't, or it's a weird thing. It's not always about, oh, well, what's going to make my book the most popular and successful?
For sure. Yeah. No, it's, and I don't know much about like how, like her writing process or whatnot, but I don't think that's why she wrote it, but it just happened to be like, I think that was a happy accident that she like had someone that was ordinary in like, in what became an extraordinary world, you know, in the secret world of wizardry or whatever. But yeah, I think that's just like, it's part of that whole, like coming back to like why I love dark fiction for kids and why I especially loved it and why it was so important to me was that like element of relatable empowerment. Brilliant. You know? Yeah.
Makes complete sense. And what I love about your career, your line of work is, whereas I fondly remember loads of dark fiction from my whole growing up, and it's what's made me into the, you know, sort of quirky weirdo that I am now. I sort of can't go back and I can't really enjoy the books quite in the same way, and I certainly can't recreate them because I really struggle to write fiction for people that aren't, I guess, really, when I write stuff, I'm writing it for myself, if you see what I mean.
Right. I understand that, yeah.
But you can write fiction targets that you can tap into that same mindset and that same kind of age group and that history, which is
it's a bit of a challenge. And when I noticed that I write to the older children, at first my thought was, and it's so cool how like, cool and weird and sometimes frustrating how like when you start out you have this idea and then it morphs into something different. And that's part of why I had to redo my book cover, is I realized that like the book cover is for smaller children than the book itself ended up being for. So I still write older than like I'd wanted to. And after this series is like done, a sneak peek, I guess, I'm going to start a series that's for smaller kids. But that's not going to be until like later next year. Maybe we'll do another podcast one.
Absolutely.
I'll let you know if I figure out how to write for some younger kids. But yeah, it's true. Like I'm going to read all the stuff that like really just made me fall in love with reading and this genre and everything. And I tried to read The Witches and it was like, it was hard for me. Like it was just
And people say this all, people will say, you know, if you have a conversation about your writing and you get the usual responses from people, you know, asking, oh, how many books have you had published? Oh, how much money do you make? You know, all that kind of stuff that people always ask. But then another one, when the conversation leads on to, oh, you know, I'm certainly not a best-selling famous author. Which I would love to. Yeah, exactly. I like it. Which I would love to be. So then people try and give you what they think is helpful advice. And they'll go, oh, well, why don't you write kids' books? And I think the implicit assumption in a lot of people's brains is that kids' books are somehow easier to write, but that's not the case at all. I cannot write a kid's book and never will be able to. I think it takes it's just a completely different skill.
Yeah, it's a different skill for sure. I mean, I love it. It's really fun, and you can get away with some things. I think that's what people think, is like you can kind of get away with some like rules or whatever that like, but it's not. It's like you have to figure out how to get rid of the adults.
Yes.
Did you ever think of that? Yeah, you have to get rid of like, well, why didn't they just call the police? You have to get rid of that option. Okay. You have to get rid of cell phones these days because you can just call for help. Like you have to just, you know, like, and then you can start the book.
Yeah, that was like a load of pre sort of questionnaire you need to get through before you can even start chapter one.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
yeah.
Tell your dad and he'll
you
sort it out.
Explain why these kids are on this adventure and not the adults.
It kind of sounds like a fun thing to try, but I suspect that, well, I don't think it's my
it's a fun challenge. Well, I enjoy it anyways.
Brilliant. No, absolutely. You really did it. You really did.
Thank you.
I was about to do my sort of in summary sum up bit then, but am I premature in that? Was there something else you wanted to pick up?
One more.
Please,
because it's like one of my favorite books, and I don't think many people have read it or even heard of it. Maybe more so now because Disney picked it up, but have you heard of Artemis Fowl?
So I have. But I don't think I could tell you anything other than that I have heard that name. I couldn't tell you where, why I know it, why it's in there. So it must be relatively well known to be in my head, but I couldn't tell you if it's a movie. I guess it's a series of books originally.
Series of books, yeah. I think there's 7 books. And now when I went back and looked at it, he had gone on to write a different like kind of sub-series, you know, like how... spin-off series would probably be the best term for it. It's about this, it takes place in Ireland, which I think is why I loved it so much. I love places in Europe
like a setting that isn't the usual. The usual is either American writer sets it in America, British writer sets it in London, probably.
You do where you know. And I get that. And I still enjoy stuff set in the States, but I especially love like foreign lands for me.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, so it takes place in Ireland, and it's this heir who's a genius. He's an absolute genius, and so that in itself is takes care of why there are no adults, because he gets rid of them. All of those. He's a criminal. He's a criminal mastermind. That's I think he's 14 or 13 or something like that. Pure genius.
Yeah, so he doesn't require the adults because he's surpassed them.
I love it. And he has adults working for him. The ones that work for him know he's a genius, and they ask him, like, okay, well, what are we going to do next? Like, he is the master.
The empowerment thing again as well.
Right. Yeah. Yes. But he's young enough to believe in fairies and, like, magic and all that. So he goes, the whole premise is, he steals money from fairies. He steals their gold. It's so great.
It's like a heist kind of thing.
It's a heist movie. The criminal mastermind in Ireland. It's just awesome. It has everything that I love. Magic, fairies, elves.
And you can imagine you've come up with this idea. You're pitching this to a publisher. What publisher is not going to want that? Sounds great, doesn't it?
This is so great. So he just does a lot of things that just make me like, he's like, okay, so he's kind of like Wednesday Addams in that I always wanted to be her. I wanted to be Artemis Fowl. Like I just wanted to be smart and that like I can do anything, you know, like he didn't worry about rules or.
Oh, that's really interesting. Wealthy. That's really, the equivalent of that is, Did I have that same thing of were there characters that I wanted to maybe it was a bit different, but maybe it was because I read different things. So Lord of the Rings doesn't have it can be read by children. It's not a children's book, but you can read it certainly as when you're young. But maybe that was more about like wishing Gandalf was your dad kind of thing. Sorry to my actual dad. I apologize. Gandalf, come on. And it, you know, or maybe there was things like wishing Sam Gamgee was your friend. Wishing Shireen and look after you.
When I was talking about like Harry Potter versus Hunger World, like Hunger Games, Harry Potter is like, I could see myself being Harry Potter, and then Katniss, I wish I was Katniss. Yeah. So like, those are both like reasons that I really wanted to read the book, but like, that's kind of like, it's almost like in the genre, you have those two, you know?
One is, hey kid, who's got a bit of a mediocre life. Don't look, this hero has also got a mediocre life, and they can have an adventure. Or it can be, hey, here's an amazing hero. You know, wouldn't you wish you were this person?
You can look up and be more like this person. And I don't know, I think both are really fun. Like, and it's just kind of.
Yeah, there's no better one. Those are two archetypal characters, aren't they? There's like the sort of downtrodden, you know, dare I say, kind of loser type character, or every man, every kid. And then there's the like the real sort of you wish you know role model is the phrase I'm desperately clutching for. But interesting.
Yeah, and the best is where it's like they start ordinary and they become that hero. That's pretty cool.
And I think I like it better when they go on that journey and that heroic thing because they just are brave and do good things. You know, you touched on that thing about like, oh, because it was the prophecy or they were the chosen one. That works less well for me. Maybe I've just seen it too many times, but
that's a little. I tend to do less with destiny versus like I'm going to choose my own fate kind of a thing. Yeah, and I like that where it's like you can overcome your destined fate is pretty cool. Like those are pretty fun. Yes. I like those adventures, and they do that with like Rick Riordan does that pretty well with the Percy Jackson series.
Yeah.
And stuff. And even though there are literal prophecies, you know, like it, like the theme is the prophecy doesn't always mean what you think it means is kind of the theme there. And so make your own guess.
Almost a subversion of that trope, isn't it? So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Quite cool. I was just thinking that you mentioned Percy Jackson, that there are some good names, aren't there, on this list, you know, Harry Potter, that's a catchy name, Percy Jackson, Artemis Fowl. These are cool names that people have come up with.
That it's is like, true. Yeah. Katniss Everdeen. Yeah, that's a cool good one.
do you remember, you might not know about this, there was that writer who claimed that J.K. Rowling ripped off their book, which was called Barry Trotter. And they've tried to take her to court and have it that Barry Trotter came before Harry Potter. But it
Barry Trotter.
Didn't really bollocks. And you know, part of me is I'm almost like, yeah, it was worth a try. Quite
C for effort. We'll give you a solid.
I'd read a Barry Trotter book, but I don't know if she's been getting one in the shops.
That's pretty funny. Barry Trotter.
Well, Angelina, thank you for taking the time to talk to me about young. Oh, are we calling it? Is it? Are we saying children's or young adult dark fiction?
I kind of lumped it together into one because there's some quality. Like, there's so much overlap, and I read a lot of like young adult type stuff when I was younger, and I think that's a trend now. It's like it's almost like you can go above and dip below if you like the genre.
Yes.
Then you'll do both. You know what I mean?
Like, if you're 10 years old and there's a book with a 14-year-old main character that's really cool, you're going to read it, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So maybe the distinction is irrelevant. So yeah, young people's dark fiction, I guess.
Yeah, young people's dark fiction.
Of course, this is the bit, this is the, you know, the tense moment when I have to decide whether this topic is worthy of a place in the Hall of Fame. Now, just to allay your fears, everything that's ever been pitched ever on the show in a year and a half has always got in, and today is no exception. So yes, I am pleased to welcome sort of young people's dark fiction into it. So maybe a new wing in the Hall of Pain, actually.
Oh yeah, that would be good. Yeah, and then we can add some specific characters from.
Could be like a library. Could be just like a big. I've got in my head. It's just like a big library wing. with loads of different books in there, all the Percy Jackson stuff's in, the Twits, all Roald Dahl.
That's
a bit of the building, actually.
That's true, yeah. Maybe next time we can talk about like the specific characters in that genre that we love or something like that.
Oh, fantastic. And we didn't even get so much onto the villains either.
The villains are great. Yeah, that's true. We missed that.
Well, this is a to be continued in that case. So we'll make this a part one, and we'll have you back on at some point in the near future.
Yeah, that sounds great.
With your book release as well.
Oh yeah, I am still setting it up, but you can visit thetravelingauthor.com. And just hit the little tab that says books, and you can actually start the series for free if you want. I have the first three chapters for free available, and then also there's an amazing audiobook made. I found such a good narrator. He's so great. So if you are interested in listening to that for free, you can just email me at support@thetravelingauthor.com. And I will send you a link for the free audiobook.
Oh, fantastic. And are there any other sort of social media avenues for you, Angelina? Or is that your main one?
Yeah, that's my main one. Thetravelingauthor.com has all my links to social media. I am on Instagram and I am on Facebook as well. But you can see all those links on there. The Facebook, it's just kind of a longer name, which is unfortunate, but it's Angelina, the traveling author, is on Facebook. And then, I think it's Angelina Alsop, the traveling author, is my page.
Alliterative double A thing going on though. So that's still catchy, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So thetravelingauthor.com has all my social media links and
brilliant.
Email and everything. So.
Oh, well, highly recommended for people to check that out and your brilliant work as well. And thanks again. This will be, we're just for the sake of anyone who's listening, we're recording this just pre-Christmas, but it'll probably be into January, February in the new year by the time this is aired. And hopefully we're all a bit closer to, you know, being vaccinated and all that kind of stuff by then. That'd be nice.
And the world opening up. Yeah.
Literally today, like 2 hours before we recorded, we've just had the announcement that London's going into tier four, the new top level lockdown. So basically that's Christmas is cancelled. You're not allowed to see your family at Christmas. So
really? Ugh, boo.
I guess it's the right thing to do in the interests of, you know, public safety and all that stuff. So, and luckily for me, I got my PlayStation 5 delivered 2 weeks ago, so I can just,
play. That's fun. So you have plans for Christmas is what I'm hearing.
I'll survive.
You'll survive. That's good.
Well, I hope you have some Christmas plans too, and you're able to do some, I'm not sure to what extent you're affected by the sort of COVID stuff, but hopefully you and your other half at least can have a nice Christmas break.
Yeah, we're just doing our family gathering like normal.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Have a lovely time, and thanks again for taking the time to appear on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. And see you soon.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'm glad I found that Real Monsters official scream that was discussed in the episode. Hope you enjoyed it. And thanks again to Angelina for being an ace guest. This is actually is available as a video episode. So we have recently revitalized our Dark Natter YouTube channel, where you can get all the back catalogue of episodes, including a couple of other video ones, and some videos of me and Liam playing video games back from last year, screaming like wimps because they were scary. So please do check that out. As always, you can find us on Twitter if you search for dark_natter. You can find us on Instagram at darknatterpodcast. And you can contact us via either of those mediums, or just seek me out, John Richter, JonRichter. I've got a website, Facebook page, Twitter account, all that stuff. Get in touch however you like. Great to hear your feedback, or if you've got any ideas for upcoming episodes, we'll be happy to take them. And hope to speak to you all very soon.